You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
Well, howdy, everybody. I'm Joe Thrashenkill, and you're listening to another episode of the Toilet of Hell radio show. If it's your first episode, what we do here is we offer you music-related diversions to improve your commute. Sometimes we talk with big guests. Sometimes we talk among ourselves. But we're always talking. That's the guarantee. I'm joined today by my good buddy, Brennaside! How's it going, Brenna?
Good. I'm doing air guitar when you say that, just like always.
Good. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right.
We got an interview this week. It's kind of a brief one, so what I figure we'll do today is we'll play this interview out with Jamie from Code Orange, and then you and I can get into the events of the week. Does that sound like an acceptable plan to you?
Yeah, last few weeks at least. There's been lots of stuff since we last talked.
There have been so many things, and we haven't had we've had guests, or we've had
more
surely
guests.
Something else. I need an excuse to cover up why we haven't talked about certain things that people have been honest about. But what have you been up to, man?
Not a whole lot, really. I'm gonna try to get into more writing. Hopefully you guys will see some more content up on Toilet of Hell. As I told Jordan, I've been acting kind of like Brock Lesnar, but without the draw. I just kind of show up when I want and then just like fuck shit up and everybody goes home early.
Turn red and get winded within 30 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, well, I do that anyway, without writing or not. So that's the one thing me and Brock Lesnar share in common.
My writing has been pretty dead lately too. I've been focused on doing these shows, and then in the couple hours that I have per night free, like instead of writing, I'm focused on literally anything else. But got it, working on a couple of pieces today, this Sunday. Great. They're hot takes, man.
Good.
We're gonna have some hot takes this week, so I'm expecting, tens of thousands of visitors this week. We'll see.
Right, of course. Any preview to what those hot takes might be, or are we going to come in with the element of surprise?
We're going to talk about it later on in this episode. Two divisive metal figures. I got things to say about them.
Okay.
So that'll be fun to get to later. In the meantime, have you ever listened to Code Orange?
I like the song Bleeding in the Blur, or whatever
that's
is the big
song.
One. That's a good, nice hit. I like that one. Their other stuff is so different from that, though. Like, a lot of it is very, a lot more, grungy vocals and hardcore kind of stuff, so.
Yeah, they kind of go all over the place. I started listening to them back when they were called Code Orange Kids, and it was kind of a more metallic hardcore sound. And then from there, like, they've added some like electronic elements, and then like kind of grungy or like new metal elements since then. It's just kind of all over the place, and it's really, I think, paid off for them, because they're one of the few successful young bands like in any form of extreme music.
For sure. But as we've talked about, part of their success probably comes from the fact that if there is a show being played literally anywhere, they're opening up for somebody there. So
that's true.
They are workhorses. They're on the road all day, every day. So,
and yeah, same thing with Power Trip, man. Like the way that you get out there is you kill your entire body by playing a show every night.
Gotta get that cheddar, man. That's how it is.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk about just a little preview. We're talking about Jamie is a drummer and a vocalist at the same time. So we're talking about like Phil Collins and other drummers / vocalists, and we're talking about his indie rock side project Adventures, and we're talking about what it's like to be on that brutal show every night schedule. So let's just go ahead and I'll go ahead and transfer into that. Please enjoy this interview with Jamie from Code Orange. You are listening to the Told of Hell radio show. I'm Joe Thrashenkill, and with me I've got a very special guest. We've got Jamie from Code Orange. Jamie, how are you doing this evening?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I got to tell you, my brain's a little frazzled. Just a little while ago on social media, you posted on your homepage, there's something very cryptic going on, and I've been racking my brain trying to figure it out. I'm 2 out of 3 passwords in, and now I'm watching what appears to be a snuff film, and I can't quite figure it out. Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of cryptic thing you got going on?
No, I'm not telling you nothing, bro.
Damn it,
it's all there. Thinnersoftheherd.com, that's it.
Folks, if you go to thinnersoftheherd.com, you will be met with some increasingly challenging puzzles. What lies at the end of this? Well, I don't know. I was hoping we would get to the end of it, but I guess we'll have to save it for another day.
We'll see.
We'll see. Well, I wanted to ask you, Jamie, you've been doing this band for, is it almost 10 years now?
Yes.
And it's been pretty much a full-time thing for the last many years. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you ever feel, I don't know, how do you keep your energy to keep going with this every day and touring all over the place so much?
I mean, it's difficult. Like, even just today, like, we launched that game while we're at band practice, while I did another, you know, and I'm not complaining at all. It's awesome. But I did another interview in the middle of that. It's just like, it's a lot of stuff going on at all times, but it's, you know, it's very worth it, and we're very grateful to be able to do it right now the way we're doing it. And we just always try to keep it interesting for the people, and that's why we do stuff like, you know, like the aforementioned website, and we're always working on stuff.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about the younger generation of, like, bigger metal bands, I'm thinking, you know, like Code Orange and Power Trip, and basically the thing that you guys have in common is just a relentless schedule of everything, constantly working and churning through. Especially touring, how do you stay sane spending so much time on the road?
I mean, I don't know. We don't really. We just do it, and we've been doing it for a long time. And I think, you know, now we got more attention than ever, so there's no way we're going to back off on doing it. We just do the stuff that feels right. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure down the road it'll become too much, but, you know, I think for now, just what we need to do, and this is like our life's purpose, so I feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's important to get out there in front of people.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you've got coming up some really big festival appearances with a ton of, you know, not so metal artists headlining the bills. I think I saw that one of them has like Nicki Minaj as a headliner. Are you going to keep, you know, the intensity and, the harsh vocals and everything for this kind of audience? You're going to, give the pop fans something new to listen to?
We're just going to do our shit. We're not going to change it at all. I mean, we would never change our shit for anybody. So, I mean, we're just do what we feel, and with it, we got the opportunity to do stuff like that. You know, Shady got the opportunity to remix some like alt J songs, which was really weird, but that turned out to be a cool experience. We've been doing a lot of different things, and we just want to branch out as far as possible in as many different worlds as possible, and that's been the plan for a while, and everyone's just kind of seeing the little steps as they go along, and there's a lot more of that to come, way more.
Totally. What kind of a reception do you see when you play in front of an audience that, you know, might not be so familiar with like extreme music?
I mean, we haven't done it that many times. We played WWE and that went on TV and that went really good. We've done some festivals. We've never done a festival like the Made in America, which is the one you're talking about, and so we'll see. But it's fun for us, and we don't give a shit. So. Whatever they want to do, I don't care.
I recall seeing the NXT wrestling thing. Are any of you guys in the band big wrestling fans?
Yeah, we definitely were growing up. I definitely still follow it, and yeah, absolutely. that was definitely when I was a kid, like, my number one dream. So my dad was pretty shocked by that. He couldn't believe it because he was saying, like, if I would have known that back in the day, it would have been crazy. So it was cool getting to meet, like, everybody. And, yeah, it was really fun. I keep up on it, so.
That's rad. When you were a kid, was that the Attitude era, or it was a little bit later than
that? Nah, I'm younger than that. I think I'm early. I was born in 1993, so, like, 2004 or 2005. 2003. I've seen all the Attitude Era stuff, of course, so, but that's not when I grew up.
Gotcha. It seems maybe there's a kind of renewed interest in both hardcore and I would say industrial sounds that your band has kind of embodied in the last couple of releases. And I feel like Harm's Way is kind of doing a similar thing. Do you think that there's a newfound interest in bands like I don't know, Godflesh for dudes your age?
I mean, Harm's Way has been doing their version of that for a long time. They're definitely doing amping it up a lot more, but they've, even on their Isolation record, they were messing with drum machines and stuff like that, and that was like 6 years ago. On our end, we're not as, I love Godflesh and many other bands of the like, but we want to incorporate electronics, and our goal is to, and we've been doing that for the past two records, and our goal is to try to use that in a new way as much as possible, as much as we definitely like industrial metal and heavy music, but we're not using it as kind of like a, we don't want to use it as like a, oh, we're this now or that, you know, it's just another tool in the toolbox, so, of what we're trying to create. So I think it's only going to get more unique in that regard.
I guess, what is the what do you see as the final formation of your sound? Is it an entirely new new genre, or is it working within the confines of electronics and hardcore and I guess melodic? I don't know what you would call it, like a more melodic metal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know what you would call it, and by the end of it, when we're done, they're not going to know what to call it. I think that there's a lot of influences. You can say, oh, on this song, this sounds like this. I don't think our records as a whole, you could say this band sounds like this. And if you do, you're not listening to it all the way. Because you can say this band sounds like this, whatever obscure or whatever 90s hardcore band, or sounds like this industrial band, but then you put this song on or this part on and none of that really adds up. So I think we're creating our own concoction of things that we like a lot. I wouldn't be arrogant so much to say, oh, we're going to create a new genre. I don't know that that's even possible. I think we're definitely creating a Code Orange sound. You're going to see more bands that sound like a Code Orange sound. And that Code Orange sound is influenced by a lot of different amazing bands and artists. And we're still growing that. We're still very in the midst of that. So my goal at the end is, you know, people could say, oh, you know, it's influenced by this, that, or this. But I think the more our material rolls out, it's going to be hard to say, as you were kind of just trying to describe, you can say, oh, it's this, but then what's Bleeding in the Blur? Or you could say, it's this, then what's Hurt Goes On, or what's Dream 2, or what, it's different, you know, but it all sounds like Code Orange, and that's at least our goal. So our goal is to make our own, make it so when people hear our music, they know that it's us, and that's it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I could kind of hear a little bit on the last one. I don't suppose any of you guys were ever into, and again, I guess the age difference might be a little bit, but nu metal, when that was a cool, popular thing?
We're actually not super influenced by nu metal. There's definitely bands that maybe fall into that category that I like. We grew up more into punk to start, and then hardcore, and then metal. But I think that some of the combination of elements that we have definitely can, are some of the combinations of elements that created nu metal. So I think in a lot of ways I could hear some of that, but I really, when I listen to our records, don't hear, there's riffs that I could hear, you know, oh, this kind of sounds like this, a little bit nu metal or whatever you want to call it. But I don't hear that in our record, and I don't hear that in our band really at all. But definitely things that influenced us are things that influence nu metal, so that makes a lot of sense. And there are certain bands we really love. I mean, we love the Deftones. We love Fear Factory. You know, we love some of those Sepultura records that some people would say are new metal or leaning that way. So, you know, you can call it what you want to call it.
For sure, for sure. You know, I tried to get my co-host on here. Unfortunately, we had Skype issues, but he was telling me some of his buddies that grew up in Pittsburgh. There's a legend of a public access show that is basically just a woman go-go dancing to Dragula over and over again. Have you? Can you confirm or deny these rumors?
I have heard something like that. I'm trying to remember what the fuck that is. But I have heard something like that. So I'll ask around about that, because that is ringing a bell, but I don't really know exactly what it is.
You know, with all of the success that Code Orange is having, I'm sure that this is the last thing on your mind, but just personally, I was a big fan of the record you helped put out as Adventures. Do you have any idea of ever maybe doing that again?
Maybe, I don't know. I really love the record that we did. I wish that we had more time to record it and that it sounded a little bit better, because I think the songs are really, really great. But I love the record we did. I like a lot of music like that. I think a couple of us just weren't feeling doing it. We did not like playing shows with that band at all. I really hated playing shows with that band. I got basically nothing out of it. And we were just like, fuck this. Still like it, though, you know. So maybe one day we'll do something, but we just were on tour, and, you know, me and Joe and Dom were just like, this isn't saying us. It's what we like musically, but it's just not us. It just didn't feel like us up there. It felt like we had to be real subdued, and it's just not the same.
I mean, I can feel you on that. I mean, trying to go to I prefer to not go to non-extreme music shows, just because I find that typically it's a little dull to
boring watch. As fuck.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of energy, and the crowd around you has.
We put our effort into it, but it was just boring. It's just like not. It wasn't Joe for sure. It wasn't me really. You know, I think Reba enjoyed it, but we just were over it. I mean, maybe one day I could see us doing another record for sure. We're not gonna play shows and shit though.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty good solution there. That's a record that I think both me and my lady enjoy equally, which is rare.
Yeah, that's awesome. I feel like a lot of the melodic aspect of that and the things we learned doing that, we've worked into Code Orange as well on some songs and structurally and stuff. So this is a good learning tool.
I wanted to ask, because I feel like you guys got some attention during the Grammys last year for kind of a non-traditional appearance. What was the statement you guys were trying to get out there by basically looking a little bit different from everybody else that showed up?
Well, we were just, one, doing what we thought would be fun and cool to do, and two, we definitely wanted to be there and to have a role there and not just blend in like a bunch of, you know, nobodies. Like, what's the point of going if you're not gonna make a little something of yourself and make a little something of the moment? So we made a little something of the moment in the way that we like to do, and we had fun doing it, and I think it was fucking great. It was fun, and I feel like if we would have did whatever anybody else would do, nobody would have gave a fucking shit or noticed or batted an eye at it. So I was right.
I'm trying to think. I think a couple of the dudes from Mastodon also use the Grammys as an occasion to put on some kind of costume. I believe baseball uniforms and the tuxedo from Dumb and Dumber.
We weren't really going for a comedy route the way that they were, but I think that we're just wearing what we thought was cool and fun. If some people don't think that was cool, then I don't really give a fuck. Nobody thought things were used to think we were cool anyway. I'm like, who cares? I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? I feel like if you go through life caring about that, you lead a miserable existence. And any time I let a little bit of that caring, you know, because I'm a human being, kind of wash through me, those are my worst days, you know? So what's the fucking point? We just did what we thought was fucking sick and fucking Shade War fucking crazy shit and Dom wore a mask and fuck it, who gives a fuck? That's just, you know, it was fun. We had a lot of fun.
I think the average person is typically incredibly self-conscious. Would you have any advice for maybe stepping outside of that?
It helps that we have five people that all believe in each other. So I feel very empathetic towards people who feel like that. Because you don't have people around you boosting you up. It's really easy to feel like that. We always have five. You know what I mean? No matter what. So I think that's really helpful. And I would say to people, you know, when I wrote the I Am King record, that's a lot of what it was about. And I think we all deal with that. I still deal with that a lot. Of course, I'm self-conscious and so are the rest of my bandmates. But there's a difference between being self-conscious and really letting the world control you and really giving a fuck. Because you can be self-conscious and feel those feelings like I do, like we all do, those human feelings. But it doesn't mean you have to really give a fuck. It doesn't mean it has to impact your choices. When you start letting it impact your choices and what you do, everything in the modern age is laughed at, made fun of, memed. Go to your favorite person's whatever Instagram page, and the majority of what's on there is going to be really, really hateful, even if you think they're really cool, you know? So what are you going to do? Just do nothing? We can all just do nothing forever so that other people don't insult us. Or we can just do what we want to do and try to listen and learn from people whose opinions we respect. And that's what we do, so.
Yeah, that's, I mean, great advice for an artist.
I think just do your thing. And I mean, we are always, we're not shut off to criticism. We listen to it and we take it when it's something that is valid and we work on it. And, but most of it's not valid, you know, 95% of it is just people saying things, you know, and if you let that get to you in your psyche, then I feel like it fucks with your mind, you know, and it can change your choices. It can change who you are. So I try my best not to let that happen. It still happens sometimes, but, you know, you got to try.
Definitely. I wanted to ask you, as a drummer and a vocalist simultaneously, I mean, you're in a pretty rare but esteemed position in rock history. Think about, Don Henley was the fellow from Genesis that I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins, that's the guy. From an outside observer, it seems like that's a combination of two extremely difficult things to do. How did you decide that this was the role that you were going to take?
You know, I started doing it when I was a kid. Nobody else in the group really wanted to sing at the time. I started doing it. I was writing all the lyrics and coming up with a lot of the foundational ideas that, and now we all do, but I still write all the lyrics. But, you know, I think it's just felt like my natural role. I never really thought twice about it and just figured out how to do it young. When you learn how to do stuff young, it's a lot easier. I'm not particularly great at either of those things, but it's what I fucking do, and I enjoy it.
Hell yeah. And, you know, as a drummer, I guess, at least when you were younger, I'm sure you had no problems finding a band. I don't know what your scene was like, but when I was a kid, everybody was trying to share.
Problems. When I first met the band, the thing is, I never wanted to be a drummer, really. I'm not a drummer. I would never play drums in someone else's band. It's just not me. That's not who I am. Drums are not really my identity in any kind of way. I enjoy them, but I don't even think about them, really, ever. The other aspects of the band are what I'm thinking about 90% of the time. Only time I'm thinking about drums is when I have to learn something or when I'm on the fucking stage and I have to think about drums. And even then, I'm not thinking about it. So for me, I just wanted to start a band that was going to be, you know, the band that I really wanted to be in. And at first, you know, it's hard to find people. But I met all my friends in our high school, in our middle school, which is really fucking weird that we're still together. But, you know, I told them how serious I was about it at 14, you know, and people laughed at us then, too, all the time. I mean, we would play local shows in high school, and people would leave. We would, you know, it's just typical shit. I mean, not to complain or anything. I mean, because who cares? It's all good. But, you know, it's just life, but I feel like, yeah, I'm lucky to have found the people that I found, for sure.
Hell yeah. I think you've got another interview coming up in just a minute, but can you give us any clue what may be coming down the pipe from Code Orange next?
We got shit coming for all this Thinners of the Herd stuff, brother, and, you know, there's more to come. There's a lot more to come. So we got a lot of stuff coming down the road very soon. We're going on tour next week. Where are you located at?
I'm in Austin.
Well, we're playing Austin.
Hell yeah.
You better fucking go, bro.
I caught you guys a couple of times, once at a festival and once opening up for, I think it was Nails, actually.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. But yeah, we're doing our own headline show, I think at the beginning of July, so if you can make it out. We're doing a headline tour starting June 22nd. It's called the New Reality Tour. We got Twitching Tongues and Vane with us, and then we have a bunch of different guests, some from the more, Nicole Dollinger is like a singer-songwriter who does this really cool, weird, dark music. Ghost Mane and Wicca Phase are two, like, kind of like SoundCloud rappers, but they do it in their own way, and they're kind of doing it on their own path. Disembodied, who's a hardcore band that we all grew up really liking, Trail of Life. So there's a lot of cool different guests, and it's a cool eclectic tour, so pretty excited about that.
Hell yeah, that sounds fun as fuck. I'm looking forward to checking it out, and everybody listening, you should go check it out as well.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. Sorry that it's been brief, but...
No worries. Whenever, thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, whenever you want, let me know.
And we're back. Bruno, there have been things happening in the news. What have you seen?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing. Nothing's happened, right?
I don't know, man. Like,
nobody came back to make more music with people that they shouldn't have gone back to making music with. None of that stuff. Everybody's been clean as a whistle the last few weeks.
To be fair, like, I think it would be easy for people to, like, overlook this news story when, like, the other major news story is, like, they're building concentration camps for children.
I mean, so, that shit's always been happening, right?
Maybe. I'm not, like, a historian or nothing, but I don't know, man. I don't think so.
I mean, I think... I don't know. I feel like that's been always a thing. I feel like I've read stories about kids trying to make it over the border with their parents and being separated, and like having to make it through their way in America without their parents or something. I feel like that's not too new of a story. How it's coming to light is how scumbaggy the current administration is handling this news and how they're not trying to clean up their mess whatsoever now that it's kind of out there.
I mean, they double down is the thing. Yeah. Like, deportations under Obama, like, were, like, enormously high compared to, like, the previous several administrations. And now it's like, well, you gotta go harder. You gotta be crueler and shit. But,
well, I don't, I hear that. And, I think that, the immigration is still kind of a separate body, and there's still that culture of, you know, Southern California and Southern Texas versus Mexico, and it's always been a thing. So maybe they've been doubling down in a way outside of Obama. I don't really picture Obama sitting stuck in his chair being like, no, we got to get all these Mexicans out of here. You know, it's
well,
just
doesn't... I mean, like, the you can, like, you can not picture it, but like the numbers are clear, like the like he was way harsher on immigration. Like, yeah, because I mean, you know, in Texas it's always a thing, like Border Patrol is harsh as fuck. Yeah. But like ever since 9/11 with the formation of DHS and like ICE becoming a thing, and like if there's any ICE agents listening to this episode, throw yourself off a bridge.
Don't they give you a, like, government issued weapon? Use that on yourself.
Yeah, put it in your mouth. Anyway, unrelated to that, back to the music, because, you know, it's all about the music
what?
And the riffs that matter. As They Lay Dying, not dead. They are no. As They Lay Rising, or As I Rise, Not Dying.
Yeah.
Anyway, the fucking Tim Lambesi out of jail, out on bail, and starting the band back up again. So what's surprising about that is that everybody that was in the band that left when it was revealed that he was going away for a while for, you know, hiring an undercover cop to kill his wife, they're back. Nick Hippa and all those fellows that decided to start Woven War. They decided, there is not enough money in this non-Tim Lambesis band, so I'm going to join the Tim Lambesis band again.
We've been back and forth with that. Is it Tim Lambesis or Tim Lambesis? Did you just call him Lambesis to give him a hard time, or is it Lambesis?
I think it's Lambesis. Lambesis is more fun to say.
Yeah, we'll say that then, Lambesis.
Yeah. I think I say that solely because some dickbag on the Metal Sex comments was going by the name Tim Lambesis or something like it ain't easy being Tim Lambesis.
Easy Lambesis, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's now did the band kind of come out with any more of a statement regarding their formation? I know they said maybe earlier in the week they were like, we're going to talk about this more, guys. More to come on this, but
so they just released this morning a 30-minute YouTube video entitled Discussion, in which every member of the band is sitting at a table, all one direction, looking like the Last Supper. And I have not watched the entire thing yet. My buddy Daniel did, and made it clear that there were moments where, like, the guys are starting to tear up and stuff, but at no point did any of them mention, like, Tim's wife or children that would, have been affected by all this. It's instead, like,
fuck them.
The 35-year-old man children that are talking about how difficult it is to get back together with your scumbag friends so you can make money.
I'm sure there's all sorts of shit about how, with Christ our Lord, forgiveness is such a powerful thing, and forgiveness is so important. You know, we have to move forward and do better.
I mean, I think they would, but I'm pretty sure that they stopped being like a Christian band years ago.
Is that true?
So, yeah, man, I think Lambesis gave up on his faith a fair while ago. Before like the whole wife thing. So,
well, I think that's what he was equating his whole wife thing to, was how he gave up his faith, because he sat 10 minutes in a was he taking some sort of religious studies in a college. Yeah. And he found out that maybe Christianity doesn't make sense in an academic way whatsoever, and it just really kind of screwed him up. So then he went and got his wife almost killed.
Yeah,
that's the thing to do.
Well, I mean, the rumors that I heard that he was got really into like cocaine and banging groupies, and apparently, his wife was not into that, so it was really cramping his style.
Itch.
Yeah, man, nothing worse than like a chick who's not cool.
The old ball and chain,
Yeah. Well, you gotta ruin his good time?
Well, now I'm not even mad at him. Of course, he tried to have her killed. How much?
That's the reasonable thing to do,
right? We can't go without groupies and cocaine. That's just so unreasonable.
Yeah, I mean, like you're a married man. You're a rock and roll man, a musician. Would your wife be cool with you like going on cocaine and hooker binges?
Yeah, she's had to be, because it's true, and I do it all the time. No, I don't think she would. I think she might have some words for that, but if she had words for that, I should probably take some sort of responsibility for those actions and not immediately go to hire a hitman to get back at her,
Yeah, I don't know. It could be tough. You're trapped in a corner. Like, on one hand, you've got your wife and the mother of your children, who, is trying to care for you. And on the other hand, you've got cocaine. So clearly, like, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
I think this was post-divorce. He tried to have her murdered. Like, she divorced him because of all this bullshit, I'm assuming. And then afterwards, I don't know if he was trying to get out of paying child support, if it was just a vendetta thing. Not really room for speculation there. It's just a bullshitty thing to do. But his band couldn't jump on this fast enough to get back with him. I thought for sure he was just gonna have a bunch of random dudes. I thought his band was gonna.
Yeah, I thought the same. Like, it was just some you know, I don't want to, dumb joke, is it some hired guns, haha, but I could have sworn,
that was a
next
level tweet. That was good.
Yeah, thank you. It didn't go viral. None of my tweets have ever gone viral. But I would assume that, like, he just hired some dudes that, like, wanted to, you know, get some experience playing in a national level band, and, you know, I would have never thought that the former members of his band would rejoin so quickly, but I guess I didn't count on how cynical some people are. I think that it's pretty clear that this is nothing but a cash grab.
Yeah,
you've got dudes who have been, you know, career musicians, and clearly what else they were doing is not as lucrative as they had hoped. So rather than, I don't know, teaching music lessons or getting a construction job or anything else, it's getting back together with a guy who fucked up hiring a hitman to kill his own wife. So there's been no mention of, you know, the victims in any of this, like the guy's wife or his children. They haven't promised that they would do anything to improve anyone's situation. Like, if you ask me, they could, you know, use all the proceeds from touring or from album sales to benefit a women's shelter or something like that to ensure that people that are abused in the future don't have to endure the same shit that Tim Lambesis's wife did. But no, it's just the boys are getting back together, and it's like nothing ever happened before. Sure, they recorded this video where they look sad, and that, I mean, that's it. You have to just act contrite for a few minutes, and then you're done.
Yeah, PR has kind of been non-existent here. I don't know, man. People are a little more brutal when it comes to, you know, you fucking up. And this is a pretty major fuck up. Like, this isn't like this isn't one of those things where he let the N-word slip in a video game or something. This is like
a heated gaming moment.
Yeah, it wasn't a heated gaming moment. It was, you know, this guy tried to take a person's life, and it's like, how do you move past that? How could you possibly forgive that or think that's cool? Like, his fans, man, have you seen some of these fucking comments?
I have. It is so disappointing to see, like, how on board the fans are with all of this. That it's like everyone is ready to, I mean, I would say forgive him, but I don't think that they were ever, like, in any way concerned about any of this. They just wanted to hear this band.
Yeah, I don't. You're probably right. I don't think there was. If you see anyone online throwing any support behind SLA Dying right now, they probably never stopped throwing that support. Even when this sort of news came out, they probably just did not care. It meant nothing to them. They were always a fan, and they're still going to be a fan, and that's just how it is. It's about the music, man, you know?
I guess the music isn't good. It's everything is subjective with music and all, but like, I do not fucks with this at all.
No, it's pretty bad. I mean, it's very run of the mill 2004-ish metalcore music. You know, Cookie Monster versus croony chorus, rinse and repeat. That's as they're dying in a nutshell. That's how it's always been.
Yeah, it's not like there's like a shortage of this to listen to. You know, there are other sources. You know, it's just I don't get it. I guess nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
It must be. Although for all the things to get fucking nostalgic over was like the shitty metalcore wave cash grab from like when I was in high school. Give me a break. Shit, that shit was terrible. That was worse than glam music. It was just a bunch of swoopy haircuts and skinny jeans and white belts and you know, a lot of acquisitions of big titty goth GFs. That's all it was for, man. That's all this is about. And all those women have since you know, gotten jobs and moved on with their life, so it doesn't make sense to bring these bands back. That's all I'm
no
saying.
I agree wholeheartedly. Although I don't recall
on every aspect.
I don't recall the big titty goth GF being a phenomenon back then, but maybe I was, you know, maybe that was a regional thing.
I think it was just I think we only just recently came up with terminology for it, but that's a concept that goes back 30, 40 years, you know.
It really is one of the eternal concepts in literature.
Right. Think you about the Cure, you know. Yeah. Think about all the ladies in the 80s with the dark makeup. It goes back, man. It might be a different flavor, maybe a different way to, you know, talk about it, but it's always been a thing. So that was just the latest way to do it was those. And it's interesting because only just recently Bleeding Through has come up with a new album, and it is truly awful. It is probably the worst music that's ever been made, and we're talking on like Bleeding Through level. It's very, very, very poor.
Yeah, I saw you were talking about these the other day. I haven't had a chance to listen to it myself. Also, I wasn't in a big hurry to listen to it with your endorsement of it.
Yeah, I think Metal Sucks gave it a 1 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
That's how I knew about it. And I just kind of gave it a listen because I was like, oh, yeah, I remember Bleeding Through. They had that one song where they had a clip from what's that? Oh, Boondock Saints. I was going to say, what's that movie you always make fun of Irish people for liking?
Have you tried to watch Boondock Saints recently?
Honestly, as recently as maybe like 2011. And even still, it was embarrassing then. Yeah. So it's just not
it's on Prime streaming right now. So I put on movies like on TV while I'm just doing shit around the house, just to have something on in the background. Right. And I started Boondock Saints just for the lulz the other day. And within like 5 minutes, I turned it off, even though I was like out doing other shit. I was like, this is so offensively bad that I can't have this playing to my pugs.
Yeah, there was like a Bleeding Through song. I don't know if it was like Bleeding Love Bullets in a Blaze of Butterfly Gunfly or some bullshit like that. I don't know what the fuck it was called. But I'm sure that's exactly what it was called. But
that was the title.
it starts out with that one quote. Like, now there was a firefight. And then doo, 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 boo, 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 their keyboards and... it's really always been bad. It's always been very, very contrived and ludicrous music that was just so formulaic. And I don't know why these bands are coming back or why they're even trying.
It's like how 40 somethings will go see like if those nostalgia summer tour tickets of like Sugar Ray and Marcy Playground and shit. It's dudes that, you know, were collecting Mountain Dew gamer points to get Avenged Sevenfold hoodies in high school. Like, these are the folks that it's appealing to because they're all, you know, getting to be 30 now.
I just can't believe, just because I feel like good music has always been there, maybe somewhere in the background. All sorts of good records got released in that time.
Like which ones?
Like Leviathan by Mastodon or something, you know, like pretty much anything on Relapse back then was pretty cool.
I think that
Dillinger,
like,
Escape Plan kind of was coming up around that time.
That's fair. And, you know, Dillinger just ended the band and they went on a huge fuck all like farewell tour that sold out everywhere. Mastodon's never gone away. I think Jordan
they kind
always
of have.
Said. Well, I mean, not in the same way, but it's like Jordan always says, we can't miss you if you don't go away. So what they got to do is take a hiatus of like 5 years or so, have somebody go to jail for, you know, aggravated assault or something, and then come back through and play Leviathan in its entirety on tour, and it'll, you know, sell out everywhere.
Well, it sounds like Easy Sleazy Tim Beasley's doing that. You know, he took some time off, you know, some mandatory time off. Yeah. And now he's coming back.
I will say that he doesn't look that bad for somebody that had like completely destroyed their natural hormones and then been deprived of hormone replacement therapy, like, and presumably only had body weight exercises to do in jail. He looks okay. So I was hoping he had, I was hoping he had big old floppy titties, but it doesn't look that way.
Same. Maybe he's going gluten free or something.
Does gluten affect your titties?
I don't know. Someone comment. Come on the show. Tell us whether gluten affects your titties or not.
Yeah. If you know the answer to this question, send us an email at twitofhell@gmail.com. Subject line, does gluten affect your titties? And we'll read it on the air. Or you can call and leave us a voicemail at whatever number that is.
I know soy does. Or that's what they say anyway.
Well, yeah, that's why the alt-righties are like, you're a soy boy, because they believe that consuming soy will somehow increase your estrogen levels, which I think in consuming, like, gargantuan amounts of soy, it does, but right. For the most part, it's fine. The phenomenon has been going for a while online. The men going their own way, or the red pills, or whatever whatever reactionary shithead is, it talks about how... soy makes them sick, and I think that these people are confusing, their masculinity with a food allergy. Like, they might just be allergic to soy.
I think if you were to take like a Reuters poll or something of who's got all the floppy man titties, I'm just sure that on the alt right, it might just be quite a higher margin, despite what they might think.
Yeah, I don't know. I've certainly watched enough video of the chuds at protests, and just the XXXL riot gear that they wear.
Because you hate yourself, and you just want to be reminded of why things are terrible.
Yep. So that's cool. I guess to not belabor the point too much, as I lay dying, reforming with the original members is a cynical cash grab. And everybody involved is a moral coward, and it's pathetic, and everybody should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, and this is something I wanted to bring up too, because I wanted to get your angle on it. Metal Sucks is now coming out and saying that they're refusing to cover any As They Lay Dying mention whatsoever here on out. They're just never going to write a word about them.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's kind of taking call-out culture and kind of turning it into blackout culture, where we're not bringing it up anymore. And I thought it was an interesting take on the situation. I thought, maybe that might be kind of a good idea, is just not bringing it up and talking about it like we are now. But, I mean, I wanted to talk about it, but what was your take on that? Do you think that we should kind of maintain calling people out, making this stuff known, making everybody aware of this, or do we think the best route is just... doing a media blackout, making sure these guys get no press whatsoever?
Did you ever listen to the episode of this podcast I did with Vince from Metal Sucks?
I did, yeah, quite a while ago, wasn't it? A few months.
Yeah, it was a good while. It might have been 2 years ago, but Vince, when we were asking, like, because Metal Sucks is an independent business, he's a family man, like. He's got to pay the bills, and that's a difficult thing to do in a something as unpredictable as blogging. But he said that the Tim Lambesis saga, when it originally happened, that just those articles about what was going on probably paid the bills for an entire year. So
yeah,
I think it is a pretty bold stance for them, especially when there is so much to gain, theoretically, for them to obsessively write about this stuff.
Yeah.
I think that there's something to it, though. I think that I think the band is counting on is their notoriety is going to get them written about whenever they inevitably release their next single, and whenever they inevitably get signed to some shitbag record label, and whenever they do that entire promotion cycle for that album and an inevitable tour. They're hoping that the big outlets are going to cover them, and basically out of outrage. And I think that that's a cool move, is nipping it in the bud by not doing that. I am planning on writing a piece about as I lay dying probably in the next day or so. And that's probably it for me. I mean, it's number one, it's, I don't think that people who read or listen to Toilet of Hell are especially interested in the music of As I Lay Dying, aside from the
probably not,
sheer
no.
the sheer novelty of get a load of this fucking asshole, you know?
Something like that. I just thought it was an interesting take on handling these sorts of situations. I think it's, as you said, it's going to probably come at great sacrifice to those guys involved. But I wonder if it's a similar way they're going to approach things in the future. If you have these kind of shitheads going out of their way to do bad and expose themselves as doing bad, I wonder if Metal Sucks is going to kind of take the same approach and say, you know what, enough Watain, enough of Taki, you know, we're just not going to talk about him anymore. If the new albums come out, we're not going to review them. Just enough's enough. We're only going to focus on the positives. Which the positives sometimes don't get as much clicks. And when you have a business yeah. model like that, that's kind of a gamble. So interested to see how that works out for them.
It that's interesting that you mentioned, like, people, you know, possibly going out of their way to try to get attention in a negative light. I think that that's something that we're going to see a lot of in the future, is basically people mm-hmm. shitting their pants for attention. Because it's not hard to do. I mean, you can go yeah. out there as a band and you can make a statement saying that, like, you know, every feminist is a bitch, and like suddenly you would be on every blog everywhere. You know, it's getting the wrong attention, the wrong kind of attention, but for some people it doesn't matter.
Yeah, like toddlers.
Well, yeah, pretty much. But it's that you know, crybaby reactionary type of tack that you can take as a band. And there'll be people out there that, like, will basically support you out of spite. Even if your music's bad. Like, who do you think is buying a Ted Nugent record nowadays?
Too many people.
Yeah.
Lots of guys who shoot defenseless animals in the woods, I'm going to assume.
Yeah, or, you know, slap a Molon Labe sticker on their truck next to the truck nuts and, you know, threaten to execute liberals.
Yeah. Man, if only truck nuts could be not problematic. Because I love truck nuts. They're great. I think it's one of the greatest inventions recently.
You gotta flip the script on it somehow. Like,
put it on your Prius.
Yeah. Yeah, you could do that.
There you go.
I don't know if I've ever seen a Prius with a trailer hitch, but I don't know if I've ever looked too closely.
I guess we'd have to figure out Prius balls specifically. Yeah. Like, you got to figure out some way to attach it to the rear of the vehicle. That big boxy butt.
Yeah, there's got to be some money in this somehow. Readers, if you know how to attach truck nuts to a Prius, shoot us an email at toiletofhell@gmail.com, subject line, attaching truck nuts to a Prius.
There we go.
we'll get to the bottom of that. I saw in the news the other day that there was another shithead, like, you know, making waves. Apparently, a good buddy Varg is hanging it up for good.
Yeah, no more Burzum, everybody. It's over. The SJWs ruined it.
He hasn't actually made music as Burzum in, like, how long now? I guess almost 20 years?
No, not at all. That's not true. He released an album, I think, in 2011, maybe. 2012.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. He made a studio album shortly after getting out of prison, I think. And then he made another album. And these weren't that long ago, maybe like 6-7 years ago. I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up again, but, yeah, he was doing some stuff.
Were those like, wind chimes and synthesizer records?
a little bit A, a little bit of B. Yeah. He kind of did the more, now that he was out, in the world again, he was allowed to pick up a guitar so he could actually, you know, make guitar based metal music. So it wasn't all the great, keyboard stuff we got to deal with from him in prison. But he was making music semi-recently. Not as recent as a typical album cycle would be. I think he hasn't had any intent on making music for a while, because he's just doing so well on YouTube, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, about that.
Yeah.
shout out to the Hot Metal Takes dudes, Brian and Pope Richard and the crew, for bringing to my attention yesterday. They were grabbing some screenshots of comments that Varg had left on videos on his channel, including this one video, like top 10 metal albums, like his favorite metal records, which included the same Bathory record twice, three Iron Maiden records, two other Bathory records. There wasn't a wide variety of things on there.
Gee.
Yeah, but somebody asked him, "Hey Varg, what do you think about Sarcophago?" To which he replies, and I quote, "I don't like it. Never listen to it."
Probably because brown people make it.
I guess so, but like, wow. What a
kind of strange
poser.
Right? Yeah, it's a huge fucking poser. Euronymous was all about Sarcophago. He was Sarcophago nuts. Everything he did was to rip off Sarcophago and Bathory all the time. So
yeah,
that just kind of highlights their relationship. You know?
Yeah. How did he avoid this? Like, how could you not listen to that if that's like the hypest shit around? Like at the time. Yeah.
It's very strange to me. I mean, Varg will say the weirdest shit sometimes. He'll say, like, "Oh, I don't like black metal. I was never black metal. Ever."
Well, I think it's clear, though, like, through all of this shit, like, you know, it's been a long time, but he's never really been that into metal. It seems like he was mostly into cosplay, LARPing, D&D, being racist. So yeah, I mean, there's very little to separate him from your average like r/TheDonald chud on Reddit, you know?
Not really, yeah. Except lots of farmland, I guess.
Yeah. Is it the Dark Enlightenment thing where he's like learning to live off the land so he can be more racist?
Yeah. That way he doesn't have to, you know, drink beverages or eat foods that might have been produced at some point by a black person somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it's a lot of effort, man. It's a lot of effort to just suck so hard. I don't know, man.
It's a lot of effort to just suck so hard.
And it kills me that like he has so many fans on YouTube that just want to watch this grumpy old bastard like vlog from the front seat of his truck.
"I only like traditional girls, and you have to be polite to them, and that's how you know that if they respond to your politeness that they're a nice traditional wife." It's the most boring shit ever. Like, I tried watching it just to make fun of it, and I couldn't do it because I was asleep by the end of it. It was terrible. He never says anything insightful. He doesn't really say anything too incendiary either. He just kind of talks about nothing. And maybe then he'll spend 45 minutes like driving through the brush and like taking out an oversized machete to cut down a tree so he can still prove that he's the biggest teenage edgelord of them all at the age of 57 or whatever. But that's about it.
I think it's notable that, like, you know, when he's talking about like traditional women and such, like, you rarely see Varg not wearing a hat because he's bald as hell. I think that we ought we ought to crowdfund a fedora for Varg so that he can tip it while he's talking about what you need to do to attract the right kind of woman.
Yeah. Some sort of acquisition of big titty goth trad wife.
Yeah, I mean, going from GF to trad wife is, I guess, the end goal of all of this.
Yeah. So I went out with my dad yesterday for Father's Day, and he's been long since divorced from not only my mother but my stepmom too. He's like second time divorced, and you know, I just sort of asked him how he was doing, and he said, "Have you ever heard the term incel?" And I don't think. I don't think I've ever laughed harder in open public restaurant area in my life. And I had to explain to him that just because he might not have gotten any in a while, that's not really what that means, and he shouldn't go around saying that.
Yeah,
he's also like a he's like a police chief. So it's oh, I'm an incel. Ha ha. Dads, please stop.
Wow. Well, I mean, like, he's not an incel though, and you're proof of it.
That's what I was trying to tell him.
Yeah.
I have four other brothers, so.
Right.
From both marriages. Right. So I think he, overall, in the grand scheme of things, he's pretty far from it, which was a funny conversation. But a lot of these guys who are into Burzum, not so much. Not so lucky.
Yeah, you know what? If they keep listening to Burzum, they'll never have four large adult sons like your father, you know? So got to throw out those Burzum tapes, listen to, I don't know, what's good trad wife in music? Garth Brooks?
Let's see what my dad listens to. One time he bought Linkin Park in Houston, and that's just like a very, and he would listen to it all the time. It's a really unfortunate live record because when Linkin Park played in Houston, they were opening for fucking Metallica, and I've never heard a more soft, disinterested crowd reaction on a live record in my entire life as to when Linkin Park was playing the big hits to a bunch of pissed off, you know, tapping foot waiting Metallica fans.
What's shocking to me is that they didn't fake it, like in, you know, post production of like piping in more crowd noise.
Yeah, nope. It was just a bunch of Metallica fans pretty politely waiting for Metallica to come on. So that was the roaring Linkin Park crowd. So that's one thing my dad listened to. He also listens to, as you mentioned when you introduced the interview at the beginning of the show, this is a lot of Phil Collins, mm-hmm. not Genesis, but Phil Collins.
Yeah, no, I know that Genesis, apparently in the early days, super cool band, lots of weird proggy shit. Not interested. I just want to hear Easy Lover.
Right. I want to hear I Can't Dance.
Hell yeah.
Which is still Genesis.
Wait, is it?
I think so. Yeah, I screwed up. I think that's very, very late Genesis.
Invisible Touch, also Genesis, also a fucking jam.
Yeah. My dad does listen to Genesis. I don't know anything about him. I just buy him a Barnes & Noble gift card every 6 months for whatever tight holiday I'm supposed to. And we just go our separate ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what I'm saying is if you don't want to be an incel, you got to throw on some Linkin Park, drive around with it, chill out, you know?
Or Genesis, or Phil Collins solo specifically.
Yeah, like a Spotify playlist mix of Genesis and Linkin Park.
Yeah, I was gonna end the show with like a Code Orange song because that would make sense. But no, I just want to play. Here's like
you got those really awful metal podcasts where they keep interrupting the really interesting conversations like we have. With a song every 2 seconds. So what you should do is the end of this show is you should play maybe a Code Orange song, and then play a Genesis song and then a Linkin Park song to wrap it up. Or just do the Code Orange song.
No, like we'll go ahead and like just make this episode 9 hours long because at the end of this conversation, it's going to be the entirety of Invisible Touch followed by a Code Orange song followed by Hybrid Theory.
Sick. Hybrid Theory was a good one. Meteor was underrated, though.
I never listened to like the only one I ever heard was Hybrid Theory.
Hybrid Theory was the shit, but yeah, it was the shit.
I think I heard like a single or two from Meteor, and I was like, this is not for me. So that was the end of my involvement with Linkin Park. Apparently, I missed out because a lot of people really, really dig that band.
Yeah, Meteor, they really dug in with the with the daddy issues. They really, really went for it. They were like, I hate my parents. That was that album. It was a good one.
Yeah, appropriate for Father's Day, then, on this Father's Day weekend.
I hate you, Dad.
Well, that's all I got, man. You got anything else to say?
I hate you, Dad.
Well, there we go.
That's all I have to say. Yeah, happy Father's Day, except to Dad.
Yeah. All right, man. I'm going to get out of here. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Jamie for talking with us. If you want more episodes, hit us up on Patreon or, you know, subscribe, tell a friend, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, all that good shit. All right, we'll see you later.
All right, guys, stay metal, except my dad.
Your hands are caught in my brother's pocket. Don't burn my gods down.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.